an oldie but a goodie from the Beatles, birthday song. This is Saturday, October 6th, 2012, on this the 240th installment of the Solomonster Sounds Off here on SEScoops.com. I am the Solomonster, in case you couldn't figure it out. Normally, I save the shout-outs for the end of the show, but I figure what I'll do here this week is I want to lead off with a shout-out, a birthday shout-out for somebody very, very special. In fact, he is one of the most respected names in the history of pro wrestling. That's right, I'm talking about the legendary Bruno Sammartino, celebrating a birthday today, born back in 1935. Was Bruno still alive and kicking today? So happy birthday to Bruno. And it is my birthday as well today, October 6th. I'd like to do this in the traditional shout-out format. So I'd like to first say that I have been a listener since episode 1. I think this show is great. I think you do a great job. So I just wanted to put that out there. But yes, it is my birthday. I want to just say thank you to everybody who's been leaving messages on Twitter, Facebook, text messages. Very much appreciate that. Means a lot. And yes, I am recording this show on my birthday, a landmark birthday no less, because it is a labor of love, this show is. So thank you all. We have a lot to get to here this week. First thing I want to lead off with actually concerns a video that popped up online a couple days ago and was promptly removed, I guess, because it wasn't supposed to go up this early. But you know how that goes on the internet. That is the Steve Austin CM Punk video that was recorded. I don't remember exactly when. It would have obviously been recorded a few months ago because Punk in this video has his old haircut. So he was probably still a babyface at the time. Although I guess it could have been recorded after he attacked The Rock at Raw 1000. But video's a little bit dated. It was a sit-down studio interview moderated by Jim Ross, who did a far better job moderating this interview than Jim Lehrer did in the first presidential debate. And the video is to promote the upcoming release of the WWE 13 video game, which I believe officially comes out, if I'm not mistaken, on October 30th, although I could be wrong. But the game is built around the modern era superstars against the Attitude Era. You'll have a choice of a lot of old Attitude Era stars combined with the stars of today. And I think this game is going to sell like hotcakes. I think it's a genius marketing campaign, quite frankly, capitalizing on the whole PG versus Attitude thing that people love talking about all the time. But I was struck watching this interview in how fantastic it was, which really should come as a surprise to no one given who was involved. But I was asked very recently a question about whether or not I think, you know, you take that old Rock versus Steve Austin build up to WrestleMania 17, one of the biggest WrestleMania main events of all time, and you'll recall that they had done a sit-down interview very similar to this before WrestleMania that year. It was Jim Ross, again, moderating the interview, although this interview was in the locker room, not in a studio somewhere. And you had the WWE champion at the time, The Rock, sitting opposite the challenger, Stone Cold Steve Austin. And very similar here, Austin is sitting across from the WWE champion, Jim Ross, moderating this interview. Very tense moments during this interview. For the people thinking that this guarantees a Punk vs. Austin match, especially at WrestleMania next year, it is not happening. There could very well be a Punk vs. Austin match at some point, perhaps WrestleMania 30 in 2014. But Austin will not be physically ready for WrestleMania next year, so it's out of the question. And that was not why this video was recorded. I mean, my guess is this video was done. The whole, you know, building the whole video game campaign around Punk and Austin, I'm sure, was done by WWE with the hope that Austin would be interested enough in doing the match. But this is the hype of video game and nothing more. So I think people getting all excited that this is the beginning of the build-up to some great match a couple of months away, they may be very disappointed. And it really is a shame, because this video was freaking awesome. It really was. It was better than any interview segment that I've seen on television in forever. And there's something wrong with that when you have a video like this to hype a video game, but your actual product is suffering in many other respects. But, you know, as I watched this interview and how great both men were, and I'll be perfectly honest with you, I thought Austin was much better than CM Punk in this segment. Not that Punk was terrible or anything like that, but he seemed a little bit flustered. I don't know what it was. Just Punk didn't seem quite as sharp as he normally is, and Austin was just fantastic in this video. But it's almost too bad that they can't do a match next year. You know, I was going over in my head a potential scenarios as far as how you would do this. How would you build to a Punk versus Austin match? You know, I always felt as though you needed some sort of, and I think I may have even floated an idea back, maybe this was before Raw 1000 or after Raw 1000, how I would have done it perhaps if Austin was on board for a match. And you do the whole thing where maybe Austin is at ringside, you know, when Punk attacks The Rock, and it all begins with just a death stare between the two of them. And obviously that didn't happen. But, you know, going over the different scenarios in my head, I would almost, and this is a complete fantasy booking on my part, because again, this is not happening, but I would almost have a deal where you have Punk hold on to the championship, which I hope he does, until the Royal Rumble. So you build to a Rock versus CM Punk match in January. And in that match between Punk and Rock, Punk goes over on The Rock. He beats The Rock with an assist from John Cena. Now, whether it's intentional, whether it's accidental, you know, Punk and Cena have been feuding, and it's entirely possible you could keep the bad blood going for another couple of months, and somehow Cena gets involved in the match. It actually would make a lot of sense, quite frankly, if you think back to how the whole Rock vs. Cena thing kicked off before WrestleMania 27. You know, I mean, at WrestleMania that year, it was Rock who cost John Cena the title against The Miz. So here's a situation where all these years later now, we've kind of come full circle where Cena gets involved, and in some way, shape, or form, he costs Rock the match. So Punk retains, and his reign continues 300 and however many days it is. And you build it up as, is there anybody out there who could take this title off CM Punk? He's now been champion for well over a year. The Rock couldn't do it. John Cena couldn't do it. Who among us can save the WWE and take the championship from CM Punk and enter Steve Austin? You have Steve Austin, CM Punk, headlining WrestleMania for the championship. You could have Austin win the title. Because quite frankly, if you're going to have an Austin versus Punk main event at WrestleMania, I love Punk, but Austin should win that match. It's not as though CM Punk is some young pup, you know, who needs to beat Steve Austin or anything like that. CM Punk is a made man. You have two main eventers going one-on-one, and in a situation like that, more often than not, you go with the outcome that people want. People would not want to see Steve Austin in his first match back in over 10 years lose to CM Punk. So you could have Austin win the championship from him at WrestleMania, and then you can have him vacate it the next night. It's not like Austin's going to be back on the road doing house shows and stuff. You know, Austin can vacate the title, and you could put the title up in a tournament after WrestleMania that culminates on Raw at the end of the month, because this ties into the 50th anniversary of the championship. Remember, the 50th anniversary of the WWE title technically is on April 29th of next year, which happens to be a Monday night. You can have a month-long or a three-week-long tournament after WrestleMania next year that builds to the finals on that Raw show, and you crown a new champion, and that could be the night that you unveil the new championship belt that we know they're working on. We've seen pictures. We know it exists. Or you can do a one-night tournament, you know, either way. So I was giving some thought to that, and I thought to myself, it is a shame they can't build a scenario like that. But man, that would be awesome if they can go in that direction. But if you haven't seen the video, it is floating around. I think Game Informer put the video back up since it was taken down from YouTube. So if you haven't seen it, go out of your way to find a link to it. It is absolutely worth checking out. The other thing worth checking out this week, if you haven't already, is WWE's new show, Main Event, which debuted on the ION Television Network on Wednesday night. I know not everybody necessarily has ION. I had to look it up. Thankfully, I do have it. And the last thing WWE needs, to be perfectly honest, is another hour of television. If anything, they need a few hours less of television. But having said that, I checked out this first main event, and I got to say it was a pretty good show. You know, it was essentially a one-match show. Technically, they had two matches. But the show was built around a main event of CM Punk and Sheamus in a champion versus champion match. Obviously, non-title. And the way they did it was they have Michael Cole and Miz as the announcers for the show. And they're standing in mid-ring when the show starts. So it's got a little bit of a different feel. They're not at ringside. They're standing in the ring. And they're essentially introducing a new audience. In theory, they're introducing new fans to the WWE product, perhaps for the first time. So I understand them wanting to stand in the ring and give an overview of who these people are and what the situation is. And, you know, this man, CM Punk, has been champion for 316 days and blah, blah, blah. So, I thought that was fine, although I would, you know, argue that you probably don't have too many new fans watching this show. My guess is it's mostly your current fan base tuning in. But still, when you have a new show on a new network, you have to do certain things to introduce the audience to your performers. And I thought they did a hell of a job with that CM Punk video package, which I'm guessing was lifted straight off his new DVD, which is out this week, by the way. And I can't wait to get my hands on that. But the hype video for Punk was awesome. I thought it did a tremendous job of explaining to people who he is and why he's important. And they even mixed in some footage from his, I think it was his IWA days, and I think it might have been, not Ring of Honor, but it was OVW footage. Although I believe there is Ring of Honor footage on the DVD. But, you know, when I saw that, I thought to myself, this is pretty freaking cool. So they did a good job with that. They, you know, as far as the match itself, the match didn't start until almost midway through the show. I mean, the first 15 or 20 minutes was hype for the match. They had a backstage interview with Heyman and Punk. They may have had an interview with Sheamus as well. I don't remember. And they essentially opened the show then with the main event. Now, again, there's only two matches on the show. But this is not unlike what they would do back in the day. You know, main event, this is not actually contrary to what WWE said. Technically, this is not the inaugural episode of main event. WWE had at least two main event shows back in the day. I mean, it used to be Saturday night's main event back when it was big. They would have a couple of those each year. But on an off night, maybe it was a Friday night, they had two NBC network specials called simply the main event. The first one, perhaps the most infamous, was the night that Andre the Giant beat Hulk Hogan to end Hogan's four-year run as the WWE champion. That was the evil twin Hebner referee angle. That was the main event. And then the following year was another main event, which may have been the last one they did, which was where they did the big angle, one of the best angles they've ever done, which was the breakup of Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage, the Mega Powers, when Elizabeth took a bump and Hogan assisted her to the back, left Savage to the Wolves in their tag match, and Savage, when Hogan came back out, he ended up slapping him in the face and left him, and just great stuff. So technically, I know I'm nitpicking here, but this was not the first main event. But, like those shows back then, and many of the early Raw shows in 93, in 94, you know, it was standard practice to open the show with your main event. Oftentimes, that would open the show, and on occasion anyway, the show would go off the air in mid-match with some mid-card match at the end. And they would tease, oh, you know, next week we'll bring you the results. And more often than not, I don't think they actually ever did. Vince McMahon would tell viewers, oh, you know, we have to go, but we'll bring you the results of this match. We'll bring you the conclusion of this match next week. And a lot of times they actually didn't. They just never brought it up again. But, you know, I thought the format was fine. I thought the match itself was pretty good. Didn't blow me away or anything like that, but it was a solid match. If anything, I was actually stunned that CM Punk pinned Sheamus. And I know, you know, Sheamus knocked himself out on the metal turnbuckle. Punk hooked the tights a little bit, because that's what heels do. But still, I expected some sort of draw. I expected Punk to walk out, maybe a DQ. I was stunned they actually had Punk pin Sheamus. So I like this a lot. The other match on the show was a tag team match. It was Santino and Zack Ryder defeating Tyson Kidd and Justin Gabriel as part of the tag team tournament, which I love. I love the concept of a tag team tournament. It's something that WWE typically shies away from. And you could easily tell by all the battle royals that they love so much. Battle royals every other week at one point it felt like we were having, but very few tournaments over the years. You know, they had that Gold Rush tournament on Raw many years ago, I think back in 05. And they've had a few tournaments here and there. But, you know, King of the Ring is not something they do every year. They just don't like tournaments. This is not a company that likes tournaments. I like tournaments. And so I like the whole concept of the tag team one, because it also puts emphasis on something that they, quite frankly, have neglected for far too long, which is tag team wrestling. Even if I'm not necessarily a fan of makeshift teams and putting, you know, Zack Ryder together with Santino and random people together as a team, still, it's nice to see what I think is the influence of Triple H, who has talked about the importance of tag team wrestling and stuff like that. Wouldn't shock me if what we're seeing here has something to do with his influence, and if that's the case, I think that's a positive sign. So, again, fine match, nothing special. Tyson Kidd and Justin Gabriel lost, so Santino and Zach move on. They hyped that next week, the big main event, Randy Orton against The Big Show, a rematch from SmackDown last week when Orton shockingly got beat clean and then knocked out by The Big Show. So I suppose Orton will get his revenge, maybe get his win back next week. I guess the idea is each week they are going to hype a big main event because they want this show to do very well. My guess is within a matter of weeks, maybe a month, this is going to fall into the Superstars pattern where Superstars at first started very strong. They wanted that show to do well on WGN, and the ratings started to fall off, and after a while, Superstars just became another show. You know, it wasn't a priority, and I assume that's what main event will turn into, but for the time being, they want the show to do well, and so they're stacking it up with big main events. But thumbs up on the first show. I liked it. Raw from Monday night, another three-hour show, this one from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Of course, good old JR was in attendance. He was back on commentary yet again. This was actually Jim Ross Appreciation Night. The actual Appreciation Night ceremony, which I'll get to a little bit later, took place off the air. They did tease it a bit on the air, but it did not happen. I thought, you know, overall it was fine. It was a good show in some respects. But unfortunately for them, not as many people tuned in this week. Saying that would be an understatement. The alarm bells are sounding in the halls of Titan Tower right now. Raw, Monday night, actually pulled. Let me bring this up here, the specific numbers. It was the lowest non-holiday Raw rating in 15 years, pulling in a 2.5, which was good for 3.5 million viewers. Now, keep in mind, Raw, on average, will average between 4.5 and 5 million viewers. So that is a significant drop-off. You have to go back to October 27th, 1997, when Raw did a 2.29 rating for a show that had Triple H against Goldust, Bret Hart against Ken Shamrock, and the Legion of Doom against Los Boricuas. This was during that whole gang warfare phase that I try to block out of my mind. You know, people love to wax eloquently and look back fondly on the Attitude Era and the late 90s, and I do too, because there was a lot of good stuff, a lot of creative stuff, a lot of fun stuff. To me, the antithesis of fun is this whole gang warfare thing that they had in 1997, which just absolutely bored me to tears. This was when they had a million ethnic factions. They had the white skinhead bikers, the Puerto Ricans, the angry black dudes, the Truth Commission, whatever the hell they were supposed to be. God, that was so boring. I hated that. And apparently a lot of people did, because even back then, that was a very low Raw rating, and you'd have to go back that far to find one that was as low as what we saw Monday night. So, you know, to you and me, the average fan, you know, you might say, well, who cares? You know, ratings don't mean as much as they used to. And to some degree, that is true. You know, back then, they were in direct competition with WCW. It was a war. Every single Monday night, it was a war. And television, back then, not nearly as fractured as it is now. I don't know if the total number of homes with cable was higher back in 97. My guess is no. I know the numbers have dropped off. In the last few years, more and more people are leaving cable behind, maybe for satellite or Hulu or whatever. But it was a different time and place, but the ratings are still very important. In fact, WWE, probably the way WCW did back in the day, more so than they should, they now live and die by these ratings. In some respects, they're kind of following the path of TNA, in that the TV ratings are more important to WWE than pay-per-view buy rates, or at least it seems that way. And that would seem like on the surface it would seem like the wrong thing, but then again, you know, we don't know precisely how important these shows are to WWE in terms of the money they make off them, and they certainly don't want to be in a position where you know, when their contract comes due with USA Network, not that I think USA would drop Raw, but, you know, hey, anything can happen. If they're unhappy with how they're performing and, you know, WWE actually lost their spot on USA, that would be a very big deal, especially because wrestling is not nearly as popular now as it was back in the day. And, you know, who knows if they would get a sweetheart deal from another television network. You know, before they came back to USA and they bailed with, you know, their deal on TNN, you know, they got a rude awakening when they found out that nobody wanted their programming. FX didn't want it. You know, TBS didn't want it. So they went back to USA, probably with a worse deal than they were figuring to get. And so ratings are very important to this company for various reasons. And they are freaking out in Stamford, Connecticut, to the point where they have already announced that this week on Raw, we are already getting the return of Vince McMahon, their secret weapon. They're busting out the chairman. Vince McMahon will be on Raw to address the state of the WWE. He'll be giving his address to the universe on the state of the WWE. And apparently the state of the WWE is not too great since they're trotting Vince McMahon back out. So, yeah, that was quite the news story this week when the Raw ratings came in. And you can blame football, but, you know, and football definitely kicks ass when it comes to the competition between the two shows. It's just the way it is. But I don't, you know, to me, you can't just blame football. It's a crutch. You know, you've had football on the air now for a couple of weeks, including some big games. This is the lowest rating so far. Why is that? I have my reasons. 3 hours being one of them. You know, is Vince McMahon going to be on Raw to announce that Raw is going back in 2 hours? Doubtful. But you know what I'd like to see? Since they love to be interactive. They talk about Raw active. They talk about putting the decisions in the hands of the WWE fans and all of that. You want to be interactive? Why don't you do this? Why don't we have Vince McMahon walk out on Raw this week and put the decision in the hands of the fans? If they can get USA Network to agree, which is a big if because USA is the one that wanted the extra hour of Raw, not Vince McMahon, but come out on Raw and do a poll. Do a Twitter poll, a website poll, any kind of poll you want to do. And put the decision in the hands of the fans. Would you like to see Raw stay 3 hours? Or would you like to see Raw go back to 2 hours from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. every single week? Maybe it is that extra third hour that's killing your show. Maybe 3 hours is just too much. Maybe they would be a lot happier if you went back to 2 hours. And if that's the case, for the health of your company, take the advice of the fans. Maybe the fans like 3 hours. You know, maybe a majority of the fans... Oh, wait, hold on a second here. We are getting a call here from Noah Mark. Well, normally I wouldn't take the call, but I guess I kind of have to. Let's take this on the air here, see what happens. Mr. Mark, you're actually on the air right now. You're on the sound off.
Oh, yeah, it's good. I'm glad I'm on the sound off on the air right now because I was hoping you would go to voicemail so I could leave you a message specifically to be on the sound off.
Well, you're gonna have to speak up, my friend. People can't hear what you're saying.
Well, here, listen. You know what, Solid Monster? I just wanted to wish you a happy birthday here on the Solid Monster sound off.
Oh, thank you, sir.
You know? And you don't have to get your diva's clock out to clock how long it's going to take me to wish you a happy birthday.
I won't, but you are a diva. Normally I would do that.
Oh, come on now. You know, it's funny, too, because, you know, you and that sound off, and I'm a fan of your sound off. I've listened to all 238 episodes. Is this 238 we're on right now?
You were close. This is 240 I'm doing right now.
Well, I might be a few behind, but anyway, listen, the thing is, I find myself arguing with your podcast sometimes, but it falls on deaf ears because I, of course, have no microphone and you have already recorded said podcast. But listen, buddy, happy birthday, man. You excited?
I am so excited. You have no idea. I can hardly contain my excitement.
Well, look, you continue with your podcast. I am actually a fan, and unlike some of your other friends out there, I actually call. Some people like you, I call.
I did get a text message from Brian Blades. He's gonna be very upset when he hears you say that.
Well, Brian Blades is too busy to worry about a phone call. That's what friends do. And you even helped him out by fronting a ticket for him for the WWE TLC match coming up.
That is true. You actually spoiled it. I haven't gotten to that part yet.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Solid Monster will be in attendance at TLC, and he will not be in attendance at Raw coming up in 2 weeks. at the Meadowlands, or I guess, what is it, the U.S. Air Arena?
No, it's the, I believe now it's the Continental Airlines Arena.
No, it's the
Izod. Ah, that's right, the Izod. Well, I don't live in Jersey, you know. You know, I have a thing against Jersey. No offense to the folks in Jersey, but I'm a New York guy.
Well, that's okay. You know, I was at a WWE event in that building in New Jersey, and you'll remember this one, Salamaster. That is when Stone Cold Steve Austin, and you were talking about this on last week's podcast, received a stinger from Owen Hart and could not continue, but somehow he also won the belt because that was his plan.
That is true. That was back in 97.
You know what I always like to bring up about that? The very next night, the Raw was in State College, Pennsylvania, in which I was there with Brian Blade. And little people remember, but that very same night, Austin was chasing Owen Hart around the ring at Raw, looking just as fine as ever.
He was. That is true. Well, they wanted him on TV. It's like John Cena. Poor John Cena with his bum arm. They're bringing him back on Monday night. They're panicking.
That's crazy, man. Well, this Vince McMahon this Monday... got John Cena this Monday. What else are they going to do, Salamaster, to get out of this rating ditch?
All right, you're hijacking my show now. You're auditioning for my show. I don't like this.
All right, listen. Well, I guess we have to do this all on the air. I can't tell you some whisper, sweet off-air nothing to you, but happy birthday, brother, and love the podcast, and I'll let you get back to it.
All right, thank you, buddy. I appreciate that.
Goodbye.
How about that? That was a nice little surprise. If I didn't know any better, I'd say he was trying to take over my show here, try to impress the webmaster. See, Mike, Webmaster Mike is far too smart. He sees through Noah's little tricks there. So where was I? I completely forgot what I was talking about. Raw, this upcoming Monday night, yes. So Vince McMahon will be there to address the universe, and John Cena, as I mentioned a moment ago, is scheduled now, whereas originally he was not. He is scheduled to appear on Raw this week in what capacity, I don't know. Obviously, he won't be wrestling. I think we know that much. So let's just run through a couple of different things here from the show on Monday night. Had a couple of good matches. Actually, you know, the first thing I think I should probably mention is the Damian Sandow-Sheamus match, which I've actually seen split opinion on here. But for the most part, that opinion has been positive. You know, some people thought maybe the match was too long, it was too boring, they don't like Sandow. I think Sandow is pretty good, you know. Pretty good in terms of his character. As a wrestler, you know, he's nothing special. He's okay. It's not like he's in there, you know, I was going to say, it's not like he's in there doing cartwheels. He actually is doing cartwheels. But this is probably the longest Damian Sandow singles match I've seen since he has been brought up to television. And went about 15 minutes and was pretty good, you know. And yes, there were slow parts where he would put Sheamus in like a chin lock or a headlock. And quite frankly, I'm not enamored with that. You know, there is room for that, but extended chin locks and rest holds to me are, you don't need that in today's wrestling because, you know, people don't buy it and it's just boring. You don't need to work a chin lock for 5 minutes when you can work that same chin lock, for example, for, you know, a minute and a half. I think it has the same effect. But other than that, it was a pretty good match. And the fact that Sheamus beat both Sandow and Cody Rhodes, who is now Damian's tag team partner, they are the Rhodes Scholars. He was at ringside doing commentary. And Sheamus gave both of them a bro kick. Somehow he managed to kick both of them in the head at the same time and pin Sandow. And I was fine with that. I have no problem with that. I don't think, you know, here's the thing. And this is a problem. I you know, the internet is probably as responsible for this as anything. And maybe even shows like this, to some degree, I will admit. But when somebody gets beat on WWE television, one match, they lose, they get pinned, they submit, whatever the case may be. One match, one loss, does not equal a burial. I see the word burial thrown around far too often. Comments on Facebook in the discussion thread or tweets that I read, oh God, they just buried Sandow. They didn't bury anybody. If anything, they did the exact opposite. They put him in there and gave him some credibility by standing toe-to-toe with the world champion for 15 minutes. I mean, didn't they have a match on SmackDown a couple of weeks ago where Sandow just ran around the ring and ran away like a little pussy? I didn't see that same Damian Sandow on this show. He went toe-to-toe with the world champion. Yeah, he didn't win. He shouldn't win. He's part of a tag team. Sheamus is the world champion. He's defending against Big Show at the pay-per-view. Why would Damian Sandow pin Sheamus? So I don't get that argument. I think that word gets thrown around far too often. So I thought that was one of the better parts of the show and more shocking in terms of the time they gave it. Let's run through some other things here. We had a tag match, Sin Cara, Rey Mysterio against Primo and Epico. Epico at one point, I have a note here from when I was live tweeting during the show that he almost got decapitated in the ropes. Sin Cara was a little shaky in this match. One person took umbrage with my use of the word botch, which I normally don't use. That's another word that tends to get overused. Oh, they botched something. They botched it. They botched it. Well, Sin Cara did have a bit of a shaky performance on Monday night, but still turned out to be a good match. You know, Primo and Epico in there with anybody, usually it's going to be a good match. And Sin Cara, Rey Mysterio win. They were hyping, let's get this first. We had a Brodus Clay, Antonio Cesaro match that went maybe 90 seconds, but was impressive as all hell, because Cesaro gave Brodus Clay his finishing move, the neutralizer, which I think is a ridiculous move, by the way. I think it's just... I know some people will disagree with me on this. I was never a fan of Wade Barrett's Wasteland, which thankfully he has ditched. You know, even though it's just a simple forearm to the head, he basically stole Cassius Ohno's move. I think it's a far better move that they can build up than Wasteland was. I don't know. I was never a fan of Wasteland. Well, likewise, I'm not a fan of this neutralizer move. And it looks awkward. You know, forget the fact that it doesn't look devastating. It just looks awkward. It looks like far too much trouble for him to go through to execute this move than it has to be. But having said that, he did get the move on Brodus Clay, and he held him up there for a few seconds, and that was pretty impressive because Brodus Clay is a big man. So as impressive as it was to see Ryback on SmackDown a few weeks ago get Tenzai up for his shell-shocked slam, it was actually almost as impressive, if not equally so, I think, for Cesaro to not only get Brodus Clay up, but if you go back and watch it, Cesaro was making faces in the camera while he had Clay up, and then he slammed him down. So that was impressive. And speaking of Ryback and Tenzai, not so impressive, unfortunately, on Monday night. And I tweeted, you know, during the match that I actually kind of felt bad for Ryback. There really was no need to do that match again. He beat Tenzai pretty decisively on SmackDown and got him up for the move. Now, you know, SmackDown is a taped show. Maybe it took him more than one try to do it. I mean, I don't remember reading in the spoilers that it you know, he had to reshoot the move or anything. It looks like on SmackDown he got him up the first time, and it was very impressive. So why not just replay that on this show? Why do you have to do the match over again? You're just begging for trouble. And that's what they got. Unfortunately, he tried to get Tenzai up for his finishing move, and it looked like he just couldn't do it. And then they tried a second time, which made it even worse. Couldn't get him up again. And, you know, Ryback called him stupid. To me, this wasn't the same thing as Randy Orton calling Kofi Kingston stupid that one time on Raw when something went wrong in their match. I just figured it was part of Ryback's gimmick. I mean, Ryback loves to shout random words like he's a robot. You know, finish it. And stuff like that. I don't think he was trying to, you know, intentionally insult Tenzai in the ring, but he was obviously not pleased, picked him up, gave him a clothesline instead, pretty vicious clothesline, actually, and pinned him. And thankfully for them, you know, what they're doing right now with Ryback, they brought him out again later on in the show with Punk and all that. It's not a big deal. People will forget about this, but it was uncomfortable to watch. And again, I felt bad for Ryback because there was no reason to do this match for a second time. Speaking of things they had no business doing, we had a World Championship debate on the show, Sheamus and The Big Show, with Booker T as moderator. And yet again, I will say Booker T, a far better debate moderator than Jim Lehrer was with Romney and Obama this week. But this debate was no good. This debate was shit, as a matter of fact. I don't know what they were trying to accomplish with this. There was a lot of comedy. You know, Sheamus made fun of the fact that Big Show smells, and Big Show, instead of punching him in the face and knocking him the fuck out, decided to play along and say that he's like a sanitary giant or a hygienic giant or something like that. And this just died a death. People just did not care. This was a complete waste of time. And if anything, this was kryptonite against the match at Hell in a Cell. This did not do a damn thing to make me want to see these two guys face each other. Now, they could come back out on Raw this week or SmackDown and easily remedy this by just having these two guys go after each other head on, and you know, which is what this feud should be. Two big dudes that want to beat the crap out of each other. So this debate sucked. They called it the Great Debate, which is impossible because the only way this could have been a great debate is by having Scott Steiner in the debate. And for those of you who never did see that Scott Steiner, Chris Nowinski debate from, I think, 03, you owe it to yourself to find it on YouTube and check it out. The other great debate was and that's what they called it, was back in 97 when they were doing an ECW invasion angle. They had some sort of working agreement with Paul Heyman, and Heyman showed up on Raw with a bunch of his merry band of misfits from ECW and had a debate with Jerry the King Lawler, whose gimmick at the time was that he hated ECW. He thought ECW stood for extremely crappy wrestling. It was a great angle, and they called that the Great Debate, and that, too, was far better than what we saw here with Sheamus and Big Show. Sheamus, at one point, they had a tout up on the screen where Sheamus was dressed up as... I forgot what the deal was, but they showed some sort of tout from Sheamus where he had some sort of disguise on. All I remember from it is I wrote down here that he looked an awful lot like El Generico. I'd rather see El Generico on Raw than Big Show and Sheamus debate. We had a Miz Zack Ryder match, nothing much to it. We had the segment with CM Punk and Jim Ross, which was the tease for Jim Ross Appreciation Night, which never actually did take place on the show itself, but was an awesome segment. Jim Ross is fantastic in things like this. Punk was very creepy and slimy, being that he is a heel. He should be. He did stomp on Jim Ross's hat, which apparently was a $700 cowboy hat, so that sucked. But aside from that, I can't really complain. They did treat Jim Ross very well after the show, which, again, I'll talk about in just a second here. But this was probably the best segment on the entire show, quite frankly. It was just back and forth, you know, Jim Ross standing up to Punk and telling him that if he wants to earn people's respect and wants to be looked at as the greatest champion of all time and better than Stone Cold Steve Austin and all those guys, that he should accept John Cena's challenge for Hell in a Cell. I mean, we could all see where this is going, but, you know, I like the way they're building this up. It's pretty cool. We had Kofi King. Oh, this was also the segment where Ryback came out, because CM Punk tried to send Jim Ross away. He went halfway up the aisle. Ryback came out, brought Jim Ross back to the ring, told Jim Ross to take his rightful seat at ringside, and CM Punk cowered and left. And again, as far as I know, I don't think they're building to an actual match between Ryback and Punk, at least not before the next pay-per-view. I think the whole Ryback thing is just a backup plan in case John Cena is not able to come back for some reason. I said a few weeks ago, or last week, that you could do a Ryback-Punk match and have Miz interfere, but I just feel like they've moved completely beyond the whole Miz thing. As good as that would have been to, I think, do the thing with Ryback and Miz and have Ryback win the Intercontinental Championship and make that mean something and be a champion as he continues to move on and move up, it's obvious that that is absolutely not in the cards. So the whole Miz thing is dead. So we'll see where they go with this. I guess they could build Ryback up as a challenger for the title at maybe Survivor Series or something, but I think that would be a mistake if your goal is to keep building Ryback up as undefeated. I think beating him, perhaps, would be a mistake. But for the time being, it's nothing more than a tease. Punk just sees Ryback, gets scared, and runs away. And it makes Ryback look like a badass, so that's a positive. Kofi Kingston, Alberto Del Rio had a match. Del Rio beat him with the armbar. Apparently, this was like the lowest-rated Raw match in like 15 years. It got like a 2.2. I mean, people just tuned out in droves. So I'm not sure if that's just kind of standard operating procedure for that point in the show, or if people just really don't like Alberto Del Rio. I don't know. Main event of the show was a tag team match. Kane and Daniel Bryan, Team Hell No, against CM Punk and Dolph Ziggler. And Brian, interestingly enough, has a new t-shirt that says no, no, no on the front, and on the back it says stop it. And as I tweeted on Monday night, I refer to that as the Daniel Bryan rape shirt. I am, quite frankly, stunned that people in the merchandising department in a company that is so concerned about being PG would let a shirt like that get out, because if you're on the outside looking in, you're not a wrestling fan, you don't know what that means. I don't know. You see somebody wearing a shirt that says, no, 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 stop it, I'm thinking rape. Maybe I'm the only one, but I don't know. Maybe he'll sell a million shirts and make a fortune. You know, good luck with that. The other thing before we get to the tag match here, actually, that I forgot to mention, there was a point in the show, and my wonderful friend Noah Marr kind of spoiled it before, but they were airing a commercial here locally for the brand new Barclay Center in Brooklyn, New York, is going to be hosting the WWE TLC pay-per-view in December. And Brian Blade and I will be in attendance. I managed to snag some tickets for the show this week, so we will be at TLC. And speaking of TLC, while we're on the subject, I noticed some chatter on the interwebs this week about a possible CM Punk Mick Foley match at TLC as being in the discussion phases behind the scenes in WWE. Now, of course, the two of them had that awesome in-ring segment a couple of weeks ago, and the pay-per-view is in New York, which is where Mick Foley is from, and he's always had a great fan following. Right now, it's all rumor. I don't know how seriously this is really being discussed, but here's my take on this. 10 years ago, CM Punk versus Mick Foley would have intrigued me. Foley pulled off a terrific match with Randy Orton at Backlash in 2004 as well. Great match. But the Mick Foley from even those days, when he was technically already retired, is not the Mick Foley of today. Not on the microphone. I mean, on the microphone, the man is still on top of his game, and hopefully he will continue to be on top of his game. I do worry about Foley and his mental faculties, say, 10 years from now, given all the abuse that he's taken, all the chair shots to the head that he took for years and years. But as far as in-ring, I don't like this idea at all. Mick Foley should not be wrestling. Aside from maybe some sort of tag match where he can tag in, do some moves for nostalgia, then tag back out, the man can barely move. I mean, it's one thing to see Hulk Hogan on Impact Wrestling, and that's sad enough. But Hogan's 60 years old, or damn near 60 years old, so you get to that point in your life, you're going to have back problems. You're going to, you know, all that stuff catches up with you. But Mick Foley, you know, is not 60 years old. Watching him run to the ring at the Royal Rumble was one of the saddest sights I've ever seen. Not that he used to sprint down to the ring like Usain Bolt, but the chickens have come home to roost for this man. You know, it was one thing to book 60-year-old Jerry Lawler to wrestle Miz on pay-per-view for the title last year. Lawler still moves around pretty well in the ring. You know, he moves around, well, at least he did before his heart attack. But Lawler moves around at 60 better than Foley does, and he's not even 50. Just stop bringing back old guys for these matches. I'd rather see them take an underutilized younger guy like Kofi Kingston. And even if it's only for a month or two, push him up the ladder a little bit. Let him beat a few guys and earn his way into the WWE title picture. If you need a main event for 1 month before Punk moves on to The Rock, let's say at Royal Rumble, go with somebody like that. At least with Kofi, you know you're going to get a great match with him. Him and Punk, I mean, the two of them are real good friends, too. They travel together. I'm sure they would love the opportunity to work together in a high-profile match. They'd have a kick-ass match. I've seen Kofi do some pretty impressive things in ladder matches. So putting them in a match at TLC, for example, I think would be fantastic. And even when he loses, and make no mistake, Kofi would lose. But even when he loses, if he has a strong showing, it ups his credibility that much more. He's not just another mid-card guy. He's a guy, you know, kind of like Damian Sandow in some respects with Sheamus on Monday night, who stood toe-to-toe with the champion and took him to the limit and damn near won the championship. Yeah, to me, there's more of an upside to taking a guy like that and slotting him into a position like that than parading out another legend from the past. So that's my take on the whole thing. Again, it's only a rumor at this point, but the idea of Foley and Punk one-on-one in 2012 in a pay-per-view main event, I mean, it's one thing to do an angle on Raw, like one television segment, but to do a potential pay-per-view title match, I don't think that's a good idea. So the main event, again, as I said, was a tag match. It was Kane and Bryan against Punk and Ziggler. And yet another show here that is bookended, or they go off the air with the World Tag Team Champions arguing with each other. as Kane and Bryan did. In fact, Kane pinned CM Punk in this match, which was something to see. So that was Raw. And I want to give WWE credit here. I want to bring this up. I think WWE deserves a lot of praise for the Jim Ross appreciation stuff that they did. I read about it. I saw the videos that they posted on WWE.com. Really, really cool stuff. Vince McMahon came out. He made a very nice speech about Jim Ross, which seemed bizarre to me to see Vince McMahon saying these things about JR, considering the way he treats the man. I mean, I'm sure he pays Jim Ross very well, but in terms of his treatment of him and his character on television, it's left a lot to be desired over the years. He did get a jab in there about how they were in Oklahoma City, which is the site where Jim Ross once joined a very elite club many years ago. I think we all know what club that is. So he did point that out. But aside from that, very nice speech. Triple H came out, gave a very nice speech. And they had Danny Hodge, wrestling legend. I don't know why Danny Hodge is not in the Hall of Fame, but he should be. He's not getting any younger. But Danny Hodge, an icon of Jim Ross, is somebody he looks up to and respects a great deal. Bill Watts was there as well, the man who hired Jim Ross and who JR worked with back in Mid-South Wrestling. He was there as well. Jerry Lawler taped a message on the Titantron for his former broadcasting partner. And Sheamus was there, I guess, since John Cena was not. He was the big star who presented Jim Ross with a sculpture that had a microphone. It was like this crystal sculpture. It looked really nice. And JR seemed to get very emotional. Just a very, very cool thing. If they ever do some sort of Jim Ross, DVD or something like that, Jim Ross's Greatest Calls or something like that, this is something that will definitely have to be on there. But they posted, not the entire thing, but they posted segments of it on WWE.com. So if you missed it, it's worth checking out. And they deserve a lot of credit for it. This is a very, very classy thing. I wish they would have done this on television. You can argue that it has no business being on television because it has no relevancy to the storylines and the pay-per-view. And that is true, but you have 3 hours to fill. And Jim Ross's segment, by the way, on this show with CM Punk did better than any other segment on the entire show. And CM Punk has been all over Raw the last couple of weeks, which is good. He should be. He's the champion. But it's not like all of a sudden hundreds upon hundreds of thousands of people tuned in just to see CM Punk at 10:15 on Monday night. Jim Ross segments tend to do very well. So, if no other reason, since they are obsessed with television ratings, I would think they would want to take the Jim Ross stuff, all 15, 20, 25 minutes of it, and pop a good rating and put it on TV, but they didn't. But they still deserve praise for it. It was very cool stuff. Impact Wrestling from Thursday night. I'm not going to lie, this show bored me to death. I was bored. I don't know what else to really say about it. This Aces and Eights thing is just killing me. Absolutely killing me. I'm sure when the reveal takes place, possibly at Bound for Glory, they'll have a nice little twist. Perhaps Bully Ray is involved, or Joe Park is actually involved, / Abyss, I don't know. But for the time being, these segments just absolutely kill me. They kill me because it's just, I can't suspend my disbelief with some of this stuff. On this show they had a segment where, contrary to what they said last week when they said they would do no harm to poor Joe Park, they showed him, his mouth was taped shut, he was drenched, they poured water on him, and they were about to give him electroshock therapy. So they are torturing this man. They are, in fact, torturing this man on television. And it kills me because it's one thing to have a segment like that, which is already just completely over the top. But they don't treat it as anything serious. They immediately go to the announcers, and I think Mike Tenay said, wow. And then they quickly moved on to the next segment. I think they were hyping up the pay-per-view or something like that. It's like, what's wrong with you people? You have somebody who works, I don't know if technically he has a contract or not, but here's this person that's part of the Impact Wrestling brand. And he's being tortured. He's being held captive and tortured. And nobody seems to give a shit. I mean, I'm not saying stop the show, but show a little bit more enthusiasm. Why not show Taz and Mike Tenay, instead of just hearing their voice, why not show them sitting there with, Taz actually takes the fucking glasses off his face for a change. He looks like a fucking blind Stevie Wonder sitting there at the announce desk. Take the glasses off, be like, oh man, Joe Park, what do we do? What do we do? They don't go the extra step to make it as realistic as they can because they realize that this angle is completely unrealistic. And the problem with it is this. It's one thing to have an angle or a storyline on your show that you want to treat as a joke. It's so over the top, you just kind of enjoy it for what it is, right? But this is their main storyline. The Aces and Eights thing has been going on now for months. This is their main story on the show every single week. This is going to be the big reveal at Bound for Glory. It's all about Aces and Eights. And it's just completely ridiculous to me. Completely ridiculous to me. We had a segment on the show with James Storm and Bobby Roode building up their street fight for Bound for Glory. This was the debut TNA appearance for King Mo Lawal, who is the, or I should say, A-star in Bellator, fighting championships. He will be fighting in Bellator, but he'll also be wrestling, or at some point he'll be wrestling at TNA. He'll make his first pay-per-view appearance at Bound for Glory. He'll be the official enforcer for the street fight. He was on the show. He did a little angle with Bobby Roode where he shoved him down. King Mo looked ridiculous. I know he's King Mo, but he walks out there looking like he's wearing a tiara on his head, and he just looked like a complete fool. And this was pretty cut and dry. That's all it was. It was to build some more heat for the match, and nothing much to it than that. Main event on this show was actually a three-way match, which blew my mind, because the main event of Bound for Glory, your biggest pay-per-view of the year, their WrestleMania, is Austin Aries and Jeff Hardy for the TNA World Heavyweight Championship. And here on this show, in the main event, which didn't go very long, but still, was a match with Jeff Hardy and Austin Aries that just so happened to have Bully Ray in there. I wouldn't have necessarily done that. I would keep Hardy and Aries out of matches where they fight each other until the pay-per-view. I think it's a unique enough match. I don't recall there being an Austin Aries-Jeff Hardy one-on-one match in TNA. And to me, this took a little bit of luster off it, because you put the two of them in the ring together when you didn't have to. But Bully Ray beat both of them, so I guess it plays into whatever storyline where Bully Ray keeps, you know, telling people, I've now beaten the world champion, I've now beaten the number one contender, I should be getting a title shot at the pay-per-view. Of course, he's now abandoned that, because earlier in the show, he made the case for why he, Bully Ray, should be Sting's tag team partner at the pay-per-view against the Aces and Eights. And by the end of the show, when Bully Ray beat both Hardy and Aries, I guess that proved that he was worthy of being Sting's tag team partner. So Bully Ray will be in Sting's, will be not in his corner, he will be his partner for the pay-per-view, which to me, this just screams that Bully Ray is obviously involved in some way with Aces and Eights. And we'll see whether he's the leader, maybe he's a co-leader, maybe he's just a cog in the machine and he's not the big dog. I guess we'll find out. Bully Ray is great, but this show, which also had Joey Ryan finally getting an opportunity to wrestle in a TNA ring, he will have a match with Al Snow, who is shockingly very over with the TNA audience. I'm not sure how or when this happened, but Al Snow has become a much beloved figure in the Impact Zone. And he will be wrestling Joey Ryan at Bound for Glory. If Joey Ryan can beat Al Snow, he will earn himself a TNA contract. And if not, I presume he is gone for good. So we will find out at Bound for Glory what the fate of young Joey Ryan is. You know what? I mean, it's a mid-card angle that's kind of in the background. Obviously, it's taken a backseat to Aces and Eights and all the main event stuff. But I like what they've done with Joey Ryan and Al Snow. You can make the argument, what does that say about Gut Check? When one of the guys, maybe the first guy they actually denied being Joey Ryan, is the one guy who's actually, you know, they're doing an angle with on television. All these other guys that they said yes to, the very first guy, Alex Silva, you know, where are these guys? These guys said yes, and yet they're not anywhere to be found on television. So that's a little suspect when it comes to the whole concept of Gut Check, but still, I like what they've done with Snow and Joey Ryan. It's kind of been in the background, but I wanted to bring that up. I actually do like what they have done with the two of them. And that was really it. I mean, they had other stuff on this show. Impact did not inspire me this week. The show seems to be falling into a bit of a rut. I'm not sure if it's the Aces and Eights stuff. I'm not sure if it's the lack maybe of X Division action on the show. I've never been a mark for the X Division or anything like that, but you know, TNA offers a little bit of this, a little bit of that. They have the knockouts. They have, you know, their TV title. They have their main event guys. And aside from his match with Douglas Williams on this show, I couldn't tell you the last time I saw Zema Ion on television. So maybe they need to offer some short-term deals to some of those guys again, like Rubix and the other guys that we simply have not seen. They've all dropped off the face of the earth. I mean, who was that one guy from Ring of Honor? Kenny King. Where's Kenny King been? Kenny King had gotten over with the audience. They liked him. Rubix, who only had like one or two appearances in TNA, was probably the most over of all the X Division guys. And he hasn't been back since. I mean, maybe they made an offer to him and he turned him down. But if not, I have no idea why they haven't brought him back. You know, Rubix being the more popular Jigsaw, as you may know him on the independent scene. So maybe it's missing a little bit of that. I don't know. It's missing something. Maybe it is the Aces and Eights thing. Maybe I'll be very happy when they move on to Phase 2 where they just kill this whole thing altogether. But, yeah, Impact did not impress me this week. All right, time for the mailbag. If you have questions or shout-outs to send in to me, please email them to me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. There are people who sometimes will send shout-outs and the like into me on Facebook, and while I do read everything, no guarantee that those will be included in the show. You have to email me. Brandon from Franklin, Kentucky writes in, "Dear Solemonster, love the podcast. Started listening on episode 190-something, he says, and I haven't missed the show since. My 18th birthday is on Sunday, October 7th, and I was hoping I could get a shout-out." Of course you can, Brandon. He also has a question. "Is it just me, or are finishers not what they used to be? Most of the time when a new wrestler debuts, they use a really basic or random move to win their matches. These moves often don't look impactful, and sometimes they look stupid. A few examples that come to mind are Heath Slater's finisher, which is just an inverted DDT, Wade Barrett's Wasteland, Richie Steamboat's Sling Blade, and Antonio Cesaro's god-awful neutralizer, which me and my cousin call Man Rape, for obvious reasons. The commentators rarely even say the names of these moves on the air. Wrestling fans will always remember the Stone Cold Stunner, RKO, and Sweet Chin Music, but who even cares about the McGillicutter?" The what? "Anyway, do you think if these up-and-coming wrestlers had better finishers with clever names, it would have an effect on the way the fans viewed their characters?" Well, finishing maneuvers were always a very important part of a wrestler's character, of their identity. So I agree. I think it is a big part of the package. It's every bit as important as their theme music, what their ring gear looks like. You know, it's the total package. That's really what will dictate, in some cases, who gets over and who doesn't. If you have a cool finishing move, sometimes that's all it takes. I mean, DDP, in large part, I don't want to say it's the only reason he became a big star, but a big reason why DDP got over the way he did in WCW was because of the Diamond Cutter. You know, he could hit the move out of nowhere, people would go nuts for it. You know, even Bill Goldberg's spear, you know, back then as well, while we're on the subject of WCW. So, I mentioned Wasteland earlier, which Wade Barrett is no longer using, apparently. I just thought it was a stupid finishing move. You mentioned Heath Slater's finisher, the inverted DDT. You know, Cody Rhodes has some kind of move like that. It's like that roll of the dice move that Test used to have. I just feel like there's three or four guys right now in WWE, and maybe there aren't, but it just feels to me like there's three or four different guys using that same kind of DDT move, and I don't need to see that move ever again. It's just stupid to me. It's really dumb, and I don't know. There's some moves that they're not allowed to use, like pile drivers, certain types of pile drivers and stuff like that. So I cut them a little bit of slack in that they may be at a bit of a disadvantage compared to 15 years ago when you had all these cool finishing moves. There just may be certain things that they're not allowed to do. And you don't want to necessarily steal people's moves, you know. You don't want to have another person start using the stunner or the rock bottom. And there's only so many moves out there, but I mean, come on. I mean, there's got to be better moves than what some of these guys are coming up with, I agree. And it is an important part of the package, and I hope Antonio Cesaro comes up with something different. I'll tell you what, he had a match on pay-per-view, maybe it was the last one or the one before, one of these matches that got thrown on at the last minute. Actually, no, it was when Zack Ryder won the Battle Royal to earn a U.S. title shot. And he had a match at Night of Champions with Antonio Cesaro, and Cesaro hit the European uppercut. He launched Ryder in the air. He propelled him into the air as he was coming off the ropes, just stood there, and as Ryder came down, he demolished him with one of the most wicked-looking uppercuts I've seen anywhere, ever. It was awesome. And to me, that is a fine finisher for Antonio Cesaro. Now, maybe he can't hit that move on a Brodus Clay. He can't exactly throw Brodus Clay in the air and wait for him to fall down. So, you know, you improvise. Have another move. Have a secondary move. Look at Sheamus. I'm very impressed by Sheamus. Sheamus doesn't just have the bro kick. Sheamus has White Noise. Sheamus has the Irish Cross or something, which was basically just a running version of the Razor's Edge. I haven't seen him use it in a while, so maybe they told him to stop because people were hitting their heads too hard. But You know, he's got that move. He's got like three or four solid moves that he can use. He's now got the Texas Cloverleaf. I mean, Sheamus is a great example, I think, of you know, what more wrestlers should do. They should have a solid three or four different moves that they can rely on as a, not just a setup move, but even a potential finishing move. I mean, I think back to the Over the Limit pay-per-view in May, and the only reason I remember this, I had watched the Daniel Bryan CM Punk match again recently, and there was a four-way match on that show for the World Heavyweight title. It had Sheamus, I think it had Del Rio and Orton and Jericho, and if I remember correctly, Sheamus ended up pinning Jericho with White Noise, which I think at the time he was just debuting as a new move, and it kind of came out of nowhere. You know, he did this backbreaker slam or whatever the hell it is, and he pinned him. And people were a little shocked by that, I think, but it's an education process. The more that you use that move and finish certain opponents off with it, people will look at that and go, okay, I can take that as a finishing maneuver. So I give Sheamus, just as an example of a modern-day guy, a lot of credit. I think more wrestlers should do that, and I think a lot of the finishers they have now, they do suck. Speaking of Chris Jericho, this person has a question regarding Jericho. He has been a listener since episode 50. Name is Michael. The most recent updates on Jericho is that WWE has ended negotiations with him on a new contract, claiming to want more control of his dates and outside activities. Obviously, I take all online reports with a grain of salt. Assuming, though, that this is true, isn't WWE really not in the best position to pull a power play right now? With ratings slipping and big stars few and far between, wouldn't it be in their best interest to accept a deal from Jericho? I can't imagine the deal he proposed was that outrageous for them to decline it. What are your thoughts? I believe this originated with a report from the Wrestling Observer site. It was either in the Observer newsletter or the Figure 4 newsletter. But basically, or maybe it was PW Insider. It was one of them. It was a report that originated on one of those websites this week. And basically, the deal is this. Chris Jericho, as the story goes, offered to come back this month to WWE. You know, Chris Jericho may well have been back on television right now. Were WWE to accept the deal he proposed. That being that they would allow him control of outside dates with Fozzy. You know, he would come back here and there when he was available to do so. He would even work full-time. He would go on the road and do house shows, but he wanted the freedom to do... Now, maybe it was beyond just Fozzy. Maybe it was other things. I don't think, like, independent shows and other wrestling things, but it was just other types of things that Jericho wanted the freedom to do, and he would just kind of go back and forth. And supposedly, WWE said no, even though Jericho, again, offered to come back this month and start back up on the road, they said no, because they must have a certain level of control over their talent. And I see both sides of the coin on this. From Jericho's perspective, he feels he's earned the right, and I feel he has as well, to be able to say, listen, I want to be a WWE guy, but I don't just want to be a WWE guy. The guy obviously has a passion for music. He loves what he does with Fozzy. I think he should be allowed to do that if he wants to. And like you said, there is such a lack of main event level talent. And Jericho, of all the main event guys, is, believe you me, more than willing to step in there with a younger guy like a Dolph Ziggler, who he worked with previously, and put them over. It's not like Jericho is just coming back to win all of his matches and make himself look good at the expense of others. Jericho, if anything, loses far too often. He's more than willing to go in there and work with people and put them over. And he'll have great matches. So if I'm WWE, I'm saying, you know what, let's work something out. We'd love to have you back. That's cool. You've earned that right. But from WWE's perspective, and we're seeing this with the Divas now, Kelly is gone. She wanted to do more outside things. It's a situation where they feel, I'm guessing, they feel as though if they cede that kind of power to Jericho, they're opening the floodgates, because what's stopping any other main event guy or diva or anybody else from going to WWE and saying, hey, I want to do outside stuff too, or I have outside projects. Why am I not allowed to do it? And Jericho is. Or the next main event level guy, maybe it's Punk in 2 years, who's ready to bail and take his ball and go home and call it quits. You know, maybe he wants a similar thing. He wants to rest his body a little bit or do something outside of wrestling and still wrestle time to time in WWE. You can't do for one and not do for another. That's not fair. So even though maybe they want to make the deal, maybe they, you know, Vince McMahon would be more than happy to have Chris Jericho back tomorrow. But they can't make that deal, because if they do it for him, they're going to have to do it for other people as well, and they don't want to open that Pandora's box. Just reading these reports, that's my guess. That's my read on the whole thing. That's how I would feel if I were them. I'd love to do it for you, but I can't. Because if I do it for you, I've got to do it for this guy, and this guy, and this guy. And all of a sudden, we've lost control. People are leaving, they're coming, they're going, and they don't want that. They want to own their talent. And that's just how they operate. Richard from Hampton, Georgia writes in with a shout-out. Dear Solid Monster, been a fan since episode 1. Proud member of the Fantastic Four. Was hoping I could get a birthday shout-out. My birthday was October 5th, and having you do so would make me happier than Heidenreich kidnapping Michael Cole and awkwardly reading poetry to him. I look forward to your awesome show every week. And by the way, happy birthday. So thank you to Richard. Happy birthday to you as well. I appreciate that. This one comes from Adam. Dear Solid Monster, longtime listener. Was just realizing that it seems the what chant has all but become extinct and has been replaced by yes. I, for one, am glad to see it go and would like to know if what became as grating on your nerves as it did mine. And what are some of the more memorable crowd chants you remember? Well, anybody who listens to this show for any extended period of time, and I believe Adam has been a longtime listener, as he said, would know my thoughts on the what chant. But to say that the what chant has become extinct, I don't know what television show you've been watching, but that is not the case, unfortunately. I was hoping that the yes chant might replace the what chant, but the what chant is still very much alive. I have noticed it off and on television just in the last couple of weeks. It is not going to go away. I don't think it will ever go away, unfortunately. But as far as memorable chants, I mean, I don't know. There's every now and then the fans will come up with something creative. One that sticks out to me that wasn't very creative. It was, you know, kind of juvenile, but looking back, it was funny that the way WWE reacted to it. The Steve Austin Dude Love match from Over the Edge in 1998, one of my all-time favorite championship matches, one of the most fun matches to me from that Attitude era, was the second pay-per-view match in 98 between Austin and Foley that had Vince McMahon as the special guest referee wearing the tightest referee shirt that you've ever seen in your life. And at one point early on in the match, the fans are clearly chanting, "Vince is gay." And I think Lawler turns to JR to see what they're chanting, and Jim Ross's response to this, he says, "I think they're saying Vince is dead." And I thought to myself, really? I don't think that's what they're chanting, but if you say so, okay. But clearly, that is what they were chanting, and I just thought, you know, JR's reaction to that was kind of ridiculous. But, you know, it wasn't like he was actually, I guess, going to acknowledge what they were saying, so why say anything at all? Why acknowledge it at all? Just leave it alone and let it pass. But I always thought that was kind of funny. And there's been other examples of that. People have mocked Jerry Lawler. If let's say, a heel is being cheered, you know, and Lawler will say, "Wow, the crowd is really behind the babyface," you know. But that is just the nature of the beast. And it's not even necessarily Lawler's fault. I'm sure that's being fed to him in his headset. Those things usually crack me up. Kenny from San Antonio, Texas writes in, listening to your latest broadcast, I heard you mention Vince McMahon a couple of times. Is Vince at every show behind the scenes? And if so, what exactly does Triple H do? Vince McMahon is at every single show behind the scenes, and he'll actually be on camera this Monday night. As far as what Triple H does, Triple H, my sense of it, he kind of just keeps the show, makes sure the show is running smoothly. Vince is normally at the gorilla position. Obviously, he's on headsets, you know, guiding the announcers. Triple H is more involved in the pre-tape segments and going over things before they do stuff like that. So that is generally speaking, at least at the Raw tapings, what Triple H does and what Vince McMahon does. But yes, Vince is at every show. I'm pretty sure Vince has probably been to every single pay-per-view as well over the years, except the only one I know for sure that Vince missed as far as pay-per-view shows. You'd have to go all the way back to the King of the Ring in 1994. That may well be the only pay-per-view Vince McMahon has ever missed. I could be wrong about that. But at least up until a couple of years ago, that had been the only show he had missed, and that was because he was having neck surgery, because he had some neck issues at the time. You may recall that during the whole steroid trial, when the verdict came in and all that, many times you would see Vince McMahon entering and exiting the courthouse wearing a neck brace. That was because he had had neck surgery around that same time. But yeah, Vince is pretty much there all the time and probably will be until the day he dies. This last letter here comes from Matt, and it's actually a little bit long. It's a bit of a rant, but I want to run through this here because I want to give my thoughts on this. He has a rant on CM Punk and his behavior towards the fans and his overall attitude. So this is from Matt. He says, is it just me or does CM Punk come off as incredibly disrespectful to his fans? Seems like every couple of months, SE Scoops posts a story about Punk berating a fan or fans on Twitter. Here's the thing. I don't think it's fair to say that he is in character when he does this and is just being heelish. If you look at some of the examples, such as when he called a one fan he called a homo, I think, on Twitter. If you look at that example, he was a face at the time in storyline, using a gay slur to insult a fan. I am not a professional wrestler or celebrity of any kind and don't have a Twitter account. I understand the whole Twitter universe opens up a floodgate for opinions. I'm sure this can get somewhat infuriating or irritating to any professional who has a large Twitter following. If you look at the latest story, Punk lashes out at a fan for suggesting that he use different theme music to generate more heat. Do I personally agree with this guy's suggestion? No. Does it warrant Punk's reaction where he basically disrespects wrestling fans? Absolutely not. Additionally, it's ironic that he says the fans don't understand the business or wrestling terminology when he works for a company that's constantly searching for fan input via online polls and raw active segments on TV. Not trying to bash Punk here. In fact, he's one of my favorite wrestlers today. What I don't appreciate is all the stories I've heard of him being incredibly rude to the fans that helped make him. I live in Chicago and have heard firsthand accounts from wrestling fans who see him out, go up to Punk, and get completely snubbed. I think that's bullshit. If Cena is out in Boston, I bet he generates more fan attention than Punk. I'd also guess, based upon reputation alone, that John Cena would handle this situation with a lot more respect than CM Punk, who seems to still have a huge chip on his shoulder after all these years and finally rising to the top. Our WWE champion seems to forget that in pro wrestling, career longevity depends on whether or not fans embrace you and for how long. You can have hot angles and great matches, but when the time and staleness set in and age catches up with you, it is only the fans that keep your memory alive. And anyway, fast forwarding to the end of the letter here, he says, I want to see the nastiest, meanest CM Punk imaginable on TV. His heel turn is probably the most exciting thing on Raw each week. But outside the ring, in real life, I expect more humility and respect and want to see him have a positive influence on an industry that sorely needs it. Where to begin on this? First things first. Some of what Punk says on Twitter, take with a grain of salt. He is, after all, now a heel. Okay, that is something to keep in mind. Now, to go to Matt's point about some of the things he would post even when he was a babyface and calling a fan a homo and stuff like that, he apologized for that. That was stupid. You know, CM Punk is a creative enough guy. He doesn't have to go online and hurl, lowbrow insults, whether they're homophobic in nature or not. He doesn't have to stoop to that level. I think he understands that. My impression of CM Punk is this. I have not met CM Punk. I, unlike you, do not live in Chicago. I don't bump into him. I don't see him riding his bike or whatever he does on his days off with his buddy Colt Cabana. Okay, I've never met the man before. I enjoy his work. I think he's a good wrestler. I think he's a great guy on the microphone. Very entertaining. I am enjoying his title reign. He comes across to me as being a bit of a prick. Always did. Whether he was a babyface or a heel. Listening to him in interviews talk about his fan interactions and again, the way he does sometimes respond to people on Twitter. Part of that also is he's just generally a very sarcastic person as well. But even though he comes across to me as being a bit of a prick, the insinuation here that he is somehow being, he is somehow disrespecting wrestling by snubbing fans, you got to understand something here. Go back to the pipe bomb promo that he cut last year. One of the things that he talked about in the promo, of which much of that he drew from his real feelings. That whole thing wasn't just completely made up and fabricated out of thin air. You know, he was really feeling that way at the time. He was feeling underappreciated. He was feeling snubbed. He didn't think that Rock deserved to be in the WrestleMania main event. And one thing he mentioned are fans that approach him at the airport at 5 o'clock in the morning with a stack of photos looking for autographs that they will then turn around and sell on eBay. And CM Punk, I'm sure, is hardly the only celebrity or wrestler that has that happen to them. But he was obviously very upset about that. He drew from his personal feelings, and he mentioned it. I'm sure stuff like that probably happens to him all the time. He probably encounters a lot of fools on the road, whether it's at airports and stuff like that. Perhaps when CM Punk is out in Chicago on his free time and not wrestling and not doing any promotion and PR for the company, perhaps he just wants to be left alone. And to me, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, if I went over to Punk and just wanted to say, you know, hey, I respect your work, and just shake the guy's hand and he snubbed me, yeah, I'd probably be upset. But you know what? At the end of the day, he doesn't want to be bothered. There's nothing wrong with that. He wants some private time. He doesn't want people coming up to him all the time. Now, that's a side effect of being a celebrity that you just have to deal with. But I don't think he's in any way being disrespectful. I mean, it depends. You know, a lot of people don't know how to behave around people like that. They have no manners. They're savages. They'll go up to people in restaurants when they're in mid-chew during their meal asking for a photo for Facebook. You know, I'm not going to give somebody a photo or an autograph if they're interrupting me when I'm eating dinner. Or if I'm in the middle of doing something with my friends and they come up to me. I mean, if I want to, I would. But he's under no obligation to be nice to fans. That's not part of the job description. He doesn't have to be nice to anybody. He could be the biggest asshole in the world if he wants to be. He doesn't get paid to be nice. You know, and aside from John Cena, who's now sidelined with an injury, Punk is the hardest working guy in that company. They got him running all over the world, doing appearances and all the different... I mean, that's what comes with the territory when you're a top guy, when you're the world champion, when you're the face of the company. That's what he wanted. Well, guess what? He got exactly what he wanted. He works very hard for WWE. I have a tremendous amount of respect for CM Punk and what he's been able to accomplish. But to say that, you know, he has to learn to be humble, and he has to learn humility, to me, that's more important when it comes to his interactions with people behind the scenes, the stuff that you and I don't see. His colleagues, his fellow wrestlers, fellow legends. I've never heard stories of CM Punk disrespecting them. I don't hear stories like I do for Sin Cara and people like that, where CM Punk is walking around the backstage area with a chip on his shoulder, thinking that he's this big star and you know, making demands and all that kind of stuff. I don't hear stories like that. I've never heard stories like that about CM Punk. Does he have a high opinion of himself? Sure. Is he as good as he says he is? He's pretty good. You know, maybe he talks himself up a little too much. Everybody does that. If you're a main event wrestler, you have to do that. You have to think that you're the best. You know, this whole best in the world thing, I get the impression it's not just a TV gimmick. He probably thinks that he is the best performer in that company. And if he does, good for him. Steve Austin probably felt the same way when he was on top, just like Triple H felt that way. And almost every other main eventer that's probably come along, except for Mick Foley. Mick Foley would probably tell you he was never the greatest wrestler. But that's the way that you should behave. You should be a little overconfident. You should think that you're the top guy. You should think that you're the best. What matters is that he conducts himself in a way that's respectful to the people he works with. And it's not like every fan he encounters, he flips them off or does something horrendous. My guess is more often than not, he's encountering people who just are out of line. And you know what? I'd snub them too. I'd say, fuck off, leave me alone. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. This poor bastard probably barely gets any sleep. The bags under his eyes have only gotten worse over the years. I mean, he always had those bags under his eyes, but now it seems like it's worse than ever. Yeah, this guy's running all over the place. He's doing everything for that company. He's doing everything they ask him to do. The last thing he needs is a bunch of pushy little teenagers getting up in his face, you know, for autographs and pictures every 5 minutes. I could see where that would get a little annoying. I don't think it has anything to do with him, you know, not having respect or humility. I mean, give me a break. I guess different people will feel different ways. And if you've ever encountered somebody and they've snubbed you, I can understand where that would probably make you, you know, that would leave an impression on you, I suppose. But I can't say I've ever had that interaction with Punk myself. And like I said, he does come across as having a very high opinion of himself and maybe not so much of some of the fans. But then again, consider some of the tweets and messages that this guy gets on social media all the time. I mean, I get some stupid shit, too, but I can only imagine the kind of stuff. He's got like a million followers on Twitter. I can imagine some of the dumb shit that people probably tweet this poor guy. I want to give a quick thanks to all of the international listeners who wrote in after last week's show. I had asked the question, is Brock Lesnar as big of a star internationally as he is here in North America? This was in light of the SummerSlam buy rate, which was actually very good and way up domestically. Internationally, it was anemic. And many of you responded to me, too many to mention individually. But by and large, the prevailing sentiment seems to be that Brock is, in fact, a big star outside of North America. Big enough where it's still very puzzling why the number would have been so low internationally for a pay-per-view that was built around him and Triple H. There were one or two people who did say that they really didn't know who Brock Lesnar is or wouldn't really know who he is outside of the current, the current Brock Lesnar in WWE today. But for the most part, people seem to think that he certainly was a big star. So I find that very interesting. And if you've got any more thoughts on that, you live outside of North America, you want to email me and let me know, I would appreciate that. So that's going to do it for the mailbag this week. Thank you, as always, for some great questions. You can keep sending them in to me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter. I promise not to to be as sarcastic and disrespectful to you as CM Punk is. @Solomonster is my handle. You can Facebook me as well, facebook.com/thesolomonster. And you can subscribe to the show for free in iTunes. Type in Solomonster Sounds Off. It should come right up. You can rate the show. You can review the show. I would very much appreciate a review of the show if you can find a few seconds for that. And we have an official Solomonster Sounds Off group, before I forget, on Facebook. If you type in Solomonster Sounds Off, that is separate from our Facebook profile. You can apply for membership for the group. I can approve you. And we've got some good debate and discussion going on there, as always. So thank you for your support. That's going to wrap up episode 240 here on this birthday weekend. I want to thank you all again for the birthday wishes and messages. I want to thank Noah Mark for his very thoughtful and timely call into the Sound Off. First here on the Sound Off this week, so thanks to him for that. And we'll be back next weekend with episode 241. So until then, be well, stay safe, and we will see you right back here next week.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solomonster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com.